I'm Dennis Dunaway. You're listening to Metal from the Inside.
You've tuned in to the most crazy rocking metal podcast on the air. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Metal from the Inside.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Metal from the Inside podcast. I'm your host, Sydney Taylor. Thank you guys so much for tuning into another episode and joining me for another week. You guys are listening to episode 33 of the Metal from the Inside podcast, and I'm so happy that you guys are here with me for another episode. I have a brand new interview, just as I do every single week, and if you guys are familiar with me and how I got into hard rock and heavy metal to begin with, you guys are going to 100% understand why I am so excited about this week's guest. Joining me on this week's episode, I have the original bass player for the Alice Cooper Group, Mr. Dennis Dunaway, joining me for a wonderful conversation about everything that he's been up to recently. And like I just mentioned, if you guys are familiar with me and what my favorite band of all time is, which is the Alice Cooper Group, you guys would know that this is a really big deal for me. And I've gotten to chat with Dennis over the years here and there at shows and everything like that. You know, we've had small conversations. Dennis does live in Connecticut, so when Alice comes and plays shows on the East Coast, which again is where I'm located, I'm in Philly and I used to live in New York, so I've always been on the East Coast. But when Alice does come and play shows here, Dennis will come and, you know, watch the show, and he'll even hop on stage for a few songs. So, you know, I've had the opportunity to speak with him here and there at different shows, and I even tell a story later on in the interview about a specific situation where that occurred. But this was the first experience that I had getting to actually sit down and have a conversation with him like this, and it meant a lot to have him on the podcast. You know, I always go back to a fan perspective, and without the Alice Cooper Group, I don't know if I would be sitting here right now talking to you guys, or even have this podcast, or even be into this music. I don't know. The Alice Cooper Group played such a huge role in where I am right now in my career and in my life. And, you know, I love Alice solo. You know, From the Inside is my favorite Alice Cooper record. I have Alice's autograph tattooed on me. I love Alice's solo career, but, you know, when I was falling in love with Alice Cooper, you know, I fell in love with the entire band. You know, I fell in love with all five of them. I was listening to Love It to Death and Killer and Billion Dollar Babies and School's Out and Muscle of Love and, you know, all of these different records. And, you know, I loved all five of them just as much as some people only love Alice. So this was just really, really special to have him on the podcast. And in this interview, like I said, we get into everything that he's been up to recently, including his most recent appearance on Alice Cooper's brand new record entitled Detroit Stories, which is out right now when you guys are listening to this episode. It is available for purchase. And the brand new video for the song Social Debris is also out on YouTube, which is a song that Dennis and the rest of the original band is a part of, with the exception of the late Glenn Buxton, who we all miss so very much. The rest of the original band was featured on this record on the track Social Debris and on another track entitled I Hate You. And we get into that in the interview, you know, what the process was like of writing those songs, recording those songs, and, you know, having them end up on this brand new record. So be sure to go ahead and pick up a copy of Detroit Stories if you haven't already, or you're not waiting for it to come in the mail. And looking at this record that was released today that has different songs written and recorded by this original group, it is so unbelievably incredible to me that 50 years after this band's debut record, you know, 1969's Pretty's for You, that we're still getting new Alice Cooper music. It is absolutely mind-blowing. And we're not just getting new Alice Cooper music from Alice himself. You know, we're, you know, with the exception, like I said, of Glenn Buxton, you know, you have Dennis Dunaway, you have Neil Smith, you have Michael Bruce writing and recording and, you know, even playing live. You know, they come out to different different shows and they'll play live here and there with Alice. You know, the fact that that is still happening and, you know, we're still getting new Alice Cooper music from the original Alice Cooper band is just, to me, incredible. And, you know, you have Bob Ezrin, who was the producer that came in the early 70s and really got these guys to the spot that they needed to get to become the massive success that they did. 50 years later, Bob is still there, you know, helping them put together these songs and, you know, being there for that creative process that he was there for 50 years ago. So it's just, it's really incredible just to see the longevity of Alice Cooper and to see, you know, how much they've done over their career and, you know, what they're still doing. And, you know, that's seen with this brand new album, like I said, Detroit Stories. So it's just absolutely incredible. And, you know, they've been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They have solidified their legacy, and we get into their legacy in the interview as well. I keep saying all the stuff that we're going to get into, but we really do kind of branch out a lot in this interview. So, but one of the things that we talk about is the legacy of the Alice Cooper Group and the songs that they wrote and recorded, you know, during that time. You know, you can go to any Alice Cooper show, you know, name any venue in any country, and odds are it's close to sold out, if not sold out. And, you know, there is an audience that is singing these songs, you know, 50 years after they came out. And we talk a little bit about that and, you know, what that means to Dennis. And I think it's just absolutely incredible to see what Alice Cooper is still doing, you know, half a century later. It is just absolutely mind-blowing. And Dennis actually shows me a little piece of Alice Cooper memorabilia or history way back, you know, when the band was first starting. I'm not going to show you exactly, or I'm not going to tell you exactly what it is. I want you guys to be as surprised as I was when he showed me, because it was just so freaking cool. But if you would actually like to see it, you can subscribe to Metal from the Inside's YouTube channel. Just go to the YouTube search bar, type in Metal from the Inside, and there you will be able to actually watch the interviews, watch our Zoom calls. Every single interview that I do that has a Zoom call with it, you know, not every single artist does an interview over Zoom per se. Like my Michael Schenker interview was not over Zoom, you know, it was over the phone. So with those instances, I obviously can't upload any video because there is none. But with an interview like this, where I was able to hop on a Zoom call with Dennis, the interview will always be posted on our YouTube channel for you guys to watch. And like I said, in this interview, Dennis shows something really cool, a really awesome piece of Alice Cooper history from way back when, way back before they were even Alice Cooper. So it's so cool. You don't want to miss it. Be sure to go ahead and subscribe to the YouTube channel so you don't miss out on seeing it. Of course, if you are listening to the podcast, you will hear him talk about it. So you will find out what it is, but it's just so freaking cool. I think you guys would enjoy watching it. Aside from all of the Alice Cooper talk, we also get into what Dennis has been up to over the last year or so, including his film entitled Cold, Cold Coffin, which is so great. It's a short film that actually stars Dennis and Alice's daughter, Calico Cooper, who we had on the podcast not too long ago. So we get into what exactly Cold Cold Coffin is, how it came to be, the process behind filming that short film. We also talk about the group that Dennis is currently in, entitled Blue Coop, which of course features Dennis and members of Blue Oyster Cult. They played the Sweden Rock Festival back in 2019, so we talk a little bit about what that experience is like, their most recent record, and what's to come for the band. So yeah, we talk about a whole lot in this interview. We cover a lot of ground, a lot of different topics are mentioned, and I think that you guys are really going to find a lot of what we speak about in this interview very interesting, especially if you are an Alice Cooper fan and a Dennis Dunaway fan. So once again, I want to say a big thank you to Dennis for taking the time to join me on the podcast. This was, once again, a dream for an Alice Cooper fan like myself. And as you'll see in this interview, Dennis is just such a great guy, so down to earth and laid back, and I was just so thankful that he wanted to come on the podcast and that we were able to set this up. I've gotten to, like I said, you know, chat with him many times over the years at different shows, but it was really great getting to speak with him this way. So I think that you guys are really going to enjoy this episode. We're going to get into the interview in just a couple of minutes, but like I always do, I want to fill you guys in on everything that's been happening in the hard rock and heavy metal world. Here is your friendly reminder that rock is by no stretch much of the imagination dead. Two records are taking the charts by storm right now, and that is the Pretty Reckless's Death by Rock and Roll and the Foo Fighters' Medicine at Midnight. And I'm pretty positive that the Pretty Reckless actually charted at number one on the Billboard charts. So congratulations to the band on that incredible achievement. 2021 has also been off to a really great start for the Foo Fighters with the release of this record. And like I mentioned, they are nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I mentioned that in the introduction of an episode a week or two ago, so they're having a pretty good start to 2021. We also just celebrated the 35th anniversary of Ozzy Osbourne's The Ultimate Sin, which is one of my favorite Ozzy records. I get a lot of shit for this, but my favorite Ozzy song is Shot in the Dark, and I don't care who knows it. It's really sentimental to me. From my childhood. I'm not sure if I've said this on the podcast before, but I've definitely said it on Sea of Tranquility, the other channel that I guest on quite a bit. I know I've definitely said it there many, many times, but when I was little, my two favorite songs in the whole world were No One Like You by the Scorpions and Ozzy Osbourne, Shot in the Dark. So my favorite Ozzy song of all time, but don't worry, my second favorite is You Looking at Me, Looking at You, which some of you probably don't even know that song. So I redeem myself, but man, I love The Ultimate Sin. That title track, too, is one of my favorite Ozzy songs. I personally love Ozzy's little phase of wearing sparkly things and the blonde hair, and I love that era. I love glam as a whole, so that's probably not too far-fetched for me to love, but man, I do love that record, and I love that Ozzy period. I love Jakey Lee and the work he did with Ozzy and eventually with Badlands. So yeah, I love The Ultimate Sin, so happy 35th birthday to The Ultimate Sin. Another one of my favorite vocalists just announced their brand new solo record entitled Standing on the Edge. My good friend Robin McCauley just debuted his first single of the same name yesterday when you were listening to this on February 25th. He premiered it at 12 p.m. Eastern Time, and man, it's such a catchy song. Robin still has those pipes. I had him on the podcast back in October, and I was blown away. A couple of months before that, I'd seen a video of him singing Anytime, and holy crap, can he still sing? Like, aside from the Black Swan record and just how incredible he sounded there, like, studio-wise, live-wise, Robin just absolutely kills it. And I was so excited when he told me that he was doing the solo record. And we finally got some announcements for you guys today and this week. So I'm very excited for this record. And if you are a Robin McCauley Shanker Group Black Swan fan, I think you guys are really going to enjoy this record. Be sure to check out the single Standing on the Edge. The record is set for release via Frontiers Records on May 7th, so be sure to pre-order your physical copies now. I tend to notice that a lot of the physical copies on Frontiers tend to go very fast, so if you guys would like a physical copy, be sure to place your orders now. Go ahead and support my pal Robin. He is one of my favorite people and is so talented to this day, so be sure to go ahead and check that song out. All right, everybody, I think that is enough of me droning on and on this week's episode. As always, stick around at the end of the episode to hear one last message from me. But when we get back from this very short break, we're going to get right into my interview with original bass player for the Alice Cooper Group, Dennis Dunaway. Welcome back, everybody, to the Metal from the Inside podcast. I am super excited about my next guest because if you know me, you guys know just how much I love Alice Cooper and the Alice Cooper Group, and I'm joined by the one and only Dennis Dunaway, the original bass player for the Alice Cooper Band, played on some of my favorite records, Billion Dollar Babies, Love It to Death, which I got up here, bunch of different records, and he is quite simply a legend. So thank you so much for taking the time to join me on the podcast. It's so great to have you.
Oh, sure. Thanks, Cindy. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah. So I always like to start my interviews out now, just because of the current kind of weird world and climate we're in, with just how are you and how are you doing? How has this time been? Because it's been crazy for all of us. It's kind of put us all in a weird position. Our lives are kind of on hold. So how have you been in just the craziness of the last year?
Well, we're all fine here. We've been homebound since last March. Cindy and I were, my wife Cindy and I were in England for the Manchester Film Festival and for the film Live from the AstroTurf. Alice Cooper that was filmed in Dallas. But we got there, and the day after we arrived, all of a sudden COVID hit England, and the festival, our film was one of the only ones that showed. But a lot of Alice Cooper fans showed up regardless. And then we went to Liverpool, and Cindy and I stayed in the John Lennon suite with a white baby grand piano and everything. And
wow.
And so this year hasn't been, you know, it seems like 5 years ago that happened, but it was actually, you know, the beginning of last year. So since then we've been at home, but we locked down after having a great trip and everything. You know, like most musicians, I'm just shifting gears and writing songs and recording demos and doing interviews to help promote Alice's album. And Cindy is creative, and our daughter is creative. She lives here as well. So we all, you know, tend to just go off in our own room and do our thing, and then we get together and it's all good. Plus, we also don't have any boredom going on around here because we rescued two puppies that are 8 months old now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so things are hopping.
Yeah, we just got a puppy like 2 weeks ago, and it's been insanity. Yeah, there's no boredom with a new puppy. There's
that's right.
No boredom.
That's right. Yeah,
it's felt like it's been, like you said, like 5 years, and it's crazy. I was just talking to somebody about, you know, the last concert I went to was, you know, a year ago this month, which is insane to think that it's already been a year, you know, and I can't even imagine what it's been like for you guys, you know, playing and, you know, doing events and everything like that. But you mentioned Alice's new album, which I know that you are in the middle of promoting and everything, which is so great. I know that you guys just released the song Social Debris, which is so great. I kind of loved Alice's explanation as to what that is and what it meant for you guys. So what is it like, you know, kind of still working with Alice and working on this album together? I mean, I know that, you know, you've written with Alice again over the years on his most recent records and have been a part of it. And that song is probably extra special to you guys because of, you know, the role that Detroit played in Alice Cooper's career.
Oh yeah. Detroit was definitely a big deal for us because I'm 18, broke from CKLW in Canada, which is right across the river from Detroit. And, you know, and we wrote the Love It to Death album and the Killer album in Pontiac, just outside of Detroit. But as far as working with Alice, it's kind of like we've been friends for so many years that it's kind of like always just a continuation. It's not like getting back together. In fact, I have an exclusive for you if you have a second here. I ran across something that's very rare. It's a letter that Alice wrote to me in 1964.
Oh yeah. My gosh.
And I don't know if you can see this, but he drew a little picture of himself on the back here. Yeah, see, there he is.
Oh, man.
And I was in Oregon. He sent it to Mr. E. Wig because we were the earwigs. And then in the letter, he's basically talking about, because I was in Oregon on my grandpa's farm working to get money to buy my first bass. And so in the letter, he's talking about which Beatles songs he wants us to learn when I get back and learn how to play.
Oh my gosh. That is so crazy that you still have so many of those letters. Cause I mean, I've seen you've posted other ones as well over the years, you know, on social media and everything. That's so great.
Well, this is the earliest one that I've found. You know, when it comes to the Detroit experience and everything, you know, the Alice Cooper group were traveling a lot then. We kind of landed in Detroit because we got a booking agency there with Leo Fenn, who became our road manager at the time. Leo was married to Patty Quatro. Their daughter was Cheryl Lynn Fenn, the actress. But Leo would put us in the station wagon and drive us all over Kingdom Come. But most of our gigs were in the Midwest. So all of a sudden, this Hollywood band all of a sudden became a Detroit band and had to, didn't have to conform to more of what the Midwest wanted, which was, you know, fist in the air all the time kind of stuff. We gladly, got all absorbed in that scene. It was, it was exciting. It was hard rock. It was, and they had their own lingo. You know, most of the people that we knew had worked building cars at one point or another, right? and we had this farmhouse where we could rehearse 10 hours a day, and lots of musicians would come over and we'd go over to their place, the Stooges and Mitch Ryder came over a lot, and we would get out the acoustic guitars and jam until, 3 or 4 in the morning. And he was usually the last guy to pack it in. He'd love jamming and trying to come up with new songs. So, a lot of stuff like that going on, but, everything was always interrupted by a string of gigs, because we had to do as many gigs as we possibly could because we didn't get paid that much. We didn't have a hit single, which is why Bob Ezrin was brought in. And that's how he helped us the most with, I'm 18.
Yeah. So that when you guys heard that song on the radio for the first time, it was in Detroit.
There are different memories depending who you talk to. Michael remembers the first time was we were driving down the road in the station wagon and it came on the radio and we pulled over and we're all jumping up and down. But I remember the first time hearing it. We had a little radio in the living room at the Pontiac Farm, and we always had it tuned in to CKLW, and the song came on. And I'm yelling up the stairs, Neil, get down here, and all that. and the phone was ringing, Leo Finn, hey, are you listening? Yeah. So, and it was very exciting, and then it turned into us arguing about who was responsible. Like, if it weren't for my bass playing, it never would have become a hit, and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Now for Social Debris, this was, if I'm not 100% sure, so I wanted to ask, was this a song that you guys had written earlier, or was this a song that you have written recently? Was this like a deep cut or something like that?
No, this was, Neil wrote this song, and I'm not sure how long ago. I know the first time I heard it was around the time of the Paranormal album, because that was one of the songs that that was submitted, or that we were all kicking around, But, a song doesn't have to be written exactly at the time that it's about for it to be clear in its, the emotion and everything. Neil's a great songwriter. So, I got a hold of the demo, and it kind of had been forgotten a little bit. And then I added a bass part, and then I had a friend of mine, Nick Didkovsky, play guitar part. And then we resubmitted it for this album because the theme fit much better to Detroit.
So when it came to, recording this song, was this recorded pre-pandemic? I know that it's really hard, obviously with Alice's touring schedule and you guys are all in different locations, the days of often getting sometimes in the same room is slim to none sometimes. So did you guys record this pre-pandemic, together, not together, kind of, how did you guys
know? No, this was pre-pandemic. We were out in Phoenix the Christmas pudding show.
Gotcha.
Not last December, but the December before that. Where we did the show, the benefit, where Joe Bonamassa and Johnny Depp joined us on stage. We went out a couple of days early, and then Michael and Neil and I worked up the song, and plus I Hate You, which was the song that I brought to the table. And we recorded both of the songs the day before the Christmas pudding show. Yes. So it was no mask, nobody was even, we may have heard something about some virus in China by then, but
it was far away then. Yeah. December.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's not coming here. Far away. It's thousands of miles away. But, exactly. I mean, it's cool that you guys still get together and record and everything. I mean, I know that you said when you write with the rest of the band and with Alice, it kind of feels like a continuation, but when you guys get together, does it bring you back to, I guess, that time when you guys were all working together and writing those original albums?
Well, yeah, I mean, we will talk about Glenn Buxton a lot. Yeah. Because he's got all the stories and he's the one that's missing, so kind of I think we talk about Glenn a lot because that kind of helps him be a part of it. you know, his spirit is always there. But yeah, you know, it's recording techniques have changed, but we're all up on that, you know, and Bob Ezrin was there. So that's another similarity to the Detroit days. But, you know, you go in and where in the old days, actually, let me say the vintage days. I like that better. In the vintage days, you know, if I, especially when Jack Richardson was working with us, with Bob Ezrin on Love It to Death and Killer, he was a bass player. And so if I had one little note in a song that I had just recorded that I think I could have done better, he would make me record the entire song again. He wouldn't punch in just for that note. Well, see, Bob Ezrin would wait. Well, Jack's going to the bathroom. Let's punch in that note while he's gone, you know? but see, in today's technology, of course, you can do all kinds of editing, even though we're pretty conservative. We try to, one reason we still can get it to sound kind of like the Love It to Death era is because we don't edit the life out of it. You know, there's a tendency for some musicians to make everything perfect, and then all of a sudden it becomes too mechanical. It loses emotion. Well, you know, we will edit certain things that really need to be done, and the rest of it we just let it be as live as possible. You know, and the most fun about it, you know, we get to the studio and, you know, Alice shows up a little bit late because he had been golfing, of course. And, you know, and then he just sits down on the couch and then we hand him the lyrics. And then he starts looking over the lyrics and changing words here and there. And, you know, and it's like, well, Alice is sitting over there doing that and we're doing this. It's not like everybody, oh, wow, we're back together again. You know, it really is just like, okay, well, we all know each other inside out. You know, we could blackmail each other 1,000 times over. But so then Bob Ezrin is there and he's always very positive, you know, and get to work and let's get this going. But the thing that's the most satisfying, I think, that really brings it together is that as soon as we start playing, it's Neil, it's Michael. It just sounds like us whether we want it to or not, you know, and that's the part that really floods back and really, it's very satisfying. You know, Neil's the best drummer in the world, if you ask me. We lock in, you know, I know what he's going to do. He knows what I'm going to do, even after these gaps in time where we haven't been in the same room. But we did it for so many years that, you know, we work as a unit, you know, and when he does a bass drum part, you know, my bass part goes with it, or we change one or the other until they lock in. You know, that's what makes a song have the power that we like to get. You know, and Social Debris had some parts. There were some parts that I had written that I had wished they had made the final recording, you know, some real fancy licks, which are probably more showing off than anything than they needed to be. But we didn't know for sure what the vocals were going to do. So right. Then I went more conservative. So there's always things like that that happen no matter how much you rehearse. When you get in the studio, you have to be ready to roll with the punches and to alter things right on the spot. And we did that with that song, you know, and we walk out that day and then we go over to the theater to rehearse for the pudding show, which, you know, so it was all just kind of one really exciting, I guess I was out there for about a week and every day was exciting.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about that and the chemistry, of course, you know, still must be there. Like you were mentioning, I mean, you guys have spent so much time together. You've written so much music together. You've played together for, you know, so long that, yeah, it only makes sense that when you guys do come back and work together, that's still palpable, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, we, and on stage, that's a different thing, you know. People that are musicians, you know, well, not all musicians write their own songs, but generally, you know, songwriting is something. recording is a whole different animal, and more different than you would think, I think, most people. And then playing live, that's a whole different animal. So all three of those things are three different elements that whenever we do those together, it's never the same. It's never like a cookie cutter thing, even though we might play the songs and on I'm 18, I might do my kick at a certain time, you know, it's still, there's a lot of things going on that vary, and you have to stay on your toes. For instance, when we played with Alice and his touring band in 2017, we did the British tour. And on the first night, which was in Leeds, I came off stage and then I went out to say hi to fans and stuff. And they're like, wow, how did you work that out with Alice, with the crutch? I'm like, what are you talking about? They're like, well, Alice, when he threw the crutch up over his head back behind him, and you ducked just in time, and it didn't hit you in the head. I'm like, I didn't even know that happened, you know? And so we're on the tour bus with, Neil and Michael and Tommy Henriksen and the whole gang, you know, Nita and all of them. And so I told them the story, and then that turned into everybody that has ever worked with Alice, it was there, started showing their stage scars. And Alice says, you know, well, three things, you know, you will work hard, you know, it will be exciting, and you will get stitches.
Yeah, I mean, it only seems natural, right? In an Alice Cooper show, there's so much going on. It's bound to happen sometimes.
Yeah, well, that's the last time that happened, because from then on that part of 18, I was not anywhere near behind him.
You're not going to get me this time. I missed it. I'm not going to let it get me this time.
Exactly.
And something that I've wondered for a little bit now, and this is a story that actually is a question for you, but also involves me in a weird way, and I'm going to explain. So I saw Alice back in 2017. He was doing the Deep Purple tour, obviously, you know, touring with his current band. And I know Tommy very well and Tyler very well, kind of just over the years and everything. So they had given me some comp tickets for that show or whatever. And you probably don't remember, but you were in kind of the same row, and Jimmy Webb was there. And it's so interesting because I did get to see you. I said hi, I got to say hello to you and everything. But, you know, you see these shows, and I know that you go see Alice, you know, often when he's in town, you know, you go say hi, and, you know, sometimes you come up on stage and play I'm 18 and you know, some songs, especially when you were doing these most recent tours, like you mentioned. But for you, when you're in the audience, because ever since that show, I've always been curious, you know, when you're in the audience and you're watching these songs, you know, that you helped, you know, write and, record and, you know, mean a lot to you. Does it feel weird to watch them kind of happen in front of you? Or, you know, is it something that, not that you have any animosity or anything, but just, does it feel like weird to watch that sometimes when you're in the audience?
Well, it's typical for an entertainer in the audience to be thinking, I should be up there. You know, that's standard. I'm not too bad that way. You know, at first, you know, say, welcome to my nightmare and stuff. Then it was kind of disturbing. In fact, I wrote a song about it. I wrote a song right after one of the first times I saw other people doing, you know, our thing, called Friend. And it will be, the demo of Friend is on a 12-inch vinyl record that is being pressed now. Wow. That will be going out to the Kickstarter people that all were so kind to donate money for me to make Cold Cold Coffin film. And it's taken me a long time. These demos all got lost and almost, and the tapes were disintegrated and all kinds of things. But I managed to get 10 songs, and one of them is Friend. And it's basically talking about how, you know, especially when Neil and I would be in the audience and people around us, younger fans wouldn't even know who we were, right?
Yeah.
So we could really just be an audience member, you know. It's exciting, you know. Alice's current touring band are all, they play the songs differently than we did, you know. Pretty, they do a good job, but you know, it's, they make it their own, you know, and I, And, you know, I watched the show. And of course, you know, if I had a clipboard, I would be, you know, writing things down about what, you know, mostly I think, and I do this with any band that I watch, in my head, I'm thinking about how I could make it better and how that could, that should do that instead right. of that and all that. So there's a lot of that going on. But on the other, the flip side of the coin, you know, I'm thinking, you know, we wrote those songs 50 years ago. And here there is still a room, a whole big giant arena full of people that are singing along with it, you know?
Yeah.
So I sit there and I feel proud too.
Yeah. And I can imagine. I mean, it's my first impression was like, it must be weird to kind of see that happening in front of you. But I mean, how long do you think, because I know after, you know, kind of the initial split happened and, you know, like you mentioned back when you originally saw those songs being played, it, you know, kind of maybe struck a nerve in you, you know, how long do you think it took you to kind of, you know, leave that mindset and go into a mindset of, you know, I am proud that this is happening and that these songs are still being played? Because I mean, obviously time kind of changes those things and you know, getting older or, you know, life experience. So for you, you know, how long do you think maybe it took you to kind of reach that point?
Well, right after the initial breakup, which I think the original band members were the last to know about, really, because I think we were kind of being kept on hold in case people rejected Alice as a solo artist, or in case the record company rejected Alice as whatever. So, you know, we thought that the Battle Axe album was going to be the next Alice Cooper album. So, but then after that, you know, we sunk so much money into that gigantic stage, you know, and meanwhile, we're reading about how we refuse to do theatrics. We're like, what? We're building this gigantic stage with hydraulics and everything, with a boxing ring that comes out from under the drum riser and all of that. And we're reading interviews saying that we refuse to do theatrics. What? But anyway, when it came down to it being us stranded without Alice, then we had this gigantic show and we couldn't headline because Alice wasn't with us and nobody would have us, let us open for them. So, you know, there was a dark period. There was a dark period where I'd sit in a dark room and kind of pout and be, you know, grouchy and everything. But, you know, I have Cindy. Cindy's, you know, she'd come in and kick me in the butt and tell me to snap out of it, you know, like Moonstruck, snap out of it. and so what I did is I was bitter about friendships, you know, Shep and Alice, I thought were my best friends. How could they do this? And I was bitter about the fans, you know, kind of letting it just happen without saying much, you know, and then what, in my opinion, and then nobody ever calling us to find out, you know, do an interview with us, say, what do you mean we don't want to do theatrics?
Yeah.
And then also the music business, our record company bailed on us. So I was bitter about the music business, and I decided, okay, I'm not going to go into New York City. And if I go to see a band, I'm going to hide out in the darkest corner, and I do not want anybody to call me up or point me out or anything. And I'm going to just go in my basement, and I'm going to write songs, and I'm going to get back to loving music for like in the early days before all of this went down. So that's what I did. I wrote like a couple of hundred songs, and some of them are, in fact, even I Hate You is one of those songs, which you can hear the anger in that song, even though, yeah, you know, we turned it into a tongue-in-cheek song. Originally, it wasn't I Hate You about anybody in particular. It was just a song. The original lyrics were basically, the concept was Dennis Punkaway. You know, I wanted to do some punk songs, right? And the premise of the lyrics at that point were somebody that hates somebody else, nobody in particular, and then putting them down with ridiculous reasons, you know, like, you know, your perfume smells like a gas station bathroom, you know, and it's like just really stupid insults. And then it evolved. And then when we decided to do it, we said, okay, let's do one where, you know, each guy in the band is talking about what he hates about the other guy, right? So and we had a blast. It was nothing but fun. Bob Ezrin was in on it, of course, and we knocked it out. Yeah. I played guitar on it, by the way.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I played the owner of the studio had a guitar like Glenn Buxton's, a white SG. And he had bought that because he loved Glenn Buxton. And so I said, well, can I borrow that? You know, it's sure. Let's tweak it up, put some new strings on it. And then next thing I know, I'm showing the guitar part to Michael, and Bob's like, hey, why don't you record, lay down a track? Okay, cool.
Michael, I'm stealing your gig. It's yeah, I'm the guitar player now.
Well, Michael plays on it as well. So we, you know, Alice, the more guitars, the merrier.
Yeah. So you brought up earlier, I kind of want to get into also what you've been doing recently. And I know that you brought up Cold, Cold Coffin, which is something that you have done recently, that film. So if you want to describe a little bit about what that is and what that process was like to those who may not be 100% familiar with it.
Well, it began with a song that I wrote for Alice called Cold, Cold Coffin. And then I just played it for a friend who's in film, but I just played it for him as a friend. Hey, here's a song I wrote today, you know, and listen to this. And he's like, that has to be, we have to make that into a film. Peter Perenia is his name. Him and his son, Orion, where I was at their house. And they're like, no, we got to make a film out of this. And I'm like, oh, okay, let's do it. And, you know, we were going to just knock out a music video, but as things started to progress, we started bringing in more people, and we started needing this castle for a location, and we needed, and next thing you know, it turned into quite the production. And I did a Kickstarter campaign, and all kinds of fans donated. And I had, you know, I had like some things in storage, like 1972 tour booklets from the Alice Cooper group and things like that. So I had a lot of items that when you donate, then you get that. And including this record that I talked about, the 12-inch vinyl, which is coming out. That'll be Chris Penn from Good Records to Go in Dallas is helping me with that. And he's the best. But so now, okay, the theme of the film, which you can see on YouTube, just look up Cold, Cold Coffin. The theme is I play an older eccentric who owns this castle, and my life isn't total reality, but you know, it's kind of a fantasy world. And then this young wife marries me, and we're in love. And I say, you know, when I die, all of this is yours. But when the doctors tell me I'm going to die, I see that she's happy about it. Yeah. And I'm going, oh, wait a minute. So then I have I have my body cryogenically frozen in a glass coffin, and I'm in the living room of this gigantic castle, and Calico plays the young gold digger wife, and she's living there with me in the room, and she's waiting for me to die, and I'm waiting for her to die. And and of course, you know, how did we cast Calico? I mean, we're New York City has all kinds of dancers, you know. We had all these options and stuff, and then I'm thinking, you know what, wait a minute, I know who could play this part, because we had a dance scene. We wanted a dance scene to happen around the coffin. And of course, Calico was on board. The hard part was just, you know, scheduling, so that when we rented this castle, we had to make sure that Calico didn't have a gig with Bisto Blanco or whatever. And we managed to work it out, and it was funny. You know, Calico is the best. She's so funny. And, you know, we had a scene in the movie where we're getting married, right? And so we're face to face. So the camera is over my shoulder showing her expression, and then the camera is over her shoulder showing my expression, right? Well, when the camera is showing my expression, Calico's crossing her eyes and sticking her tongue out crazy and everything, and I'm trying not to laugh.
That sounds like, I was going to say, Calico sounded like the perfect choice because she has just enough humor and she's also into, I had her on the podcast not too long ago, she's also into that kind of like dark stuff and all the darkness and everything like that. So she seemed like the perfect choice to
play. Exactly. Exactly. You know, we did that film and it has won two awards. It won Best Music Video for the Los Angeles Film Festival, Los Angeles Motion Picture Film Festival, and also Shock Fest. So it won two awards, and you know, we tried to do more things with it, but it's hard to commercialize a music video, you know, unless you're like Beyonce or something, I guess, these days. Now the other film is the Live from the AstroTurf, which we're still hoping will come to light and be available to fans. That one happened with because of my book, which I see you have behind you. Yeah. Okay, you get some brownie points for that. And hardcover too, it looks like.
Yeah, it is a hardcover.
Okay, good. Those disappeared overnight. All of a sudden they became impossible for me to get a hold of. So anyway, this other film was, it was actually a book signing for that book. And it was in Dallas, 2015 in October. And Chris Penn, who I didn't know, you know, all I know is this guy who owns a record store keeps wanting me to do a book signing at his record store. And the publisher is thinking, well, you know, that's, we should be doing bookstores and film festivals. You know, this is a record store. How does that work out? Well, he was so persistent. I'm like, okay, let's do it, you know? And he says, well, I have a little stage here in my store and people perform here. Would you perform? I said, yeah, hey, how about if I see if Neil and Michael want to join in? I said, yeah. Well, Chris was up to something that I wasn't totally aware of at the time, but he had already planned out that Alice was going to be in town and have a day off on the day that he scheduled this thing for. So we got Alice to sneak into the back room. And while Neil and Michael and I were out sitting in electric chairs, signing stuff for fans and doing a Q&A and everything, then we're like, hey, would you like to hear some songs? You know, and in the meantime, I should mention the color of the panties on the book cover. Well, Chris had tracked down AstroTurf that color. So the stage was pink AstroTurf instead of green, right? And the whole store was decorated in with pink trim and everything.
Yeah.
And he had the balloons and everything else going. So Neil and Michael and I played Caught in a Dream, just the three of us. And everybody was, oh, wow, wow. And then we started Be My Lover and out came Alice from out of nowhere. And people were like, in shock. They're like, wait a minute, we're in a record store and it's the Alice Cooper group, right? So Chris had talked to a friend of his and said, hey, Steve Gaddis, Steve, you're in film. Can you bring a camera down here and film this? Because these guys are my hero. And on Monday, I'm not going to believe it actually happened.
So the documentation of this.
Yeah, exactly. And so it was supposed to just be something for Chris's archives, but Steve got some of his other friends down there with cameras, and the recording came out so good. The recording of the music came out really good. So then Chris got Bob Ezrin to mix that, and Steve was saying, you know what? I think we've got a film here. Well, that film has won a lot of awards, various awards all across the country, Phoenix and Dallas, of course. We've even shown it in London, Hollywood. Oh, man, I can't even think of all the places that we traveled to film festivals for that one. But anyway, so we're working on that too. And I'm working on another film now with my band Blue Coop, Joe and Albert Bouchard from Blue Oyster Cult fame. We're doing an animated film for a song on our new CD 11 Even called Jump the Gun.
Awesome. Yeah, I know that you guys back in 2019, you know, when the world was normal and live shows were a thing, I know you guys played Sweden Rock Festival, if I'm correct, right?
That's right, with Ryan Roxy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, how was that? Because I know that this group has been a thing for a little while now. You guys obviously put out that record and you play shows all across the country. So how is it to play that festival? Because, you know, that's a pretty big festival, you know, lots of people flock to that. So what was that like?
That was the best run festival I've ever seen. I mean, the guys that ran that, every single thing was taken care of. There were places, just for instance, walking around the festival grounds, you would all of a sudden there would be a little wooden bridge and there's no water, but that was it in case it rained.
Wow.
That would be needed. Stuff like that, every single thing. I love that festival. It was 4 days and there was a lot of people there that should have used some more sunburn lotion. People that had no shirts and their backs were totally burnt. But 4 days, you know, and there was all kinds of top bands, but we were the final band of
four. Wow.
So and we followed Deep Purple or Ritchie Blackmore, I think, yeah. And so we were on the stage, there were four stages. So we were on the stage that was behind the audience that was watching Rainbow. And so another band had canceled. So I told the festival guys, and Blue Coop decided, okay, we're not going to start until they're done over there. And so we timed it just right. As soon as Deep Purple was finished. And then all of the audience, you could tell people were just ready to go out the exit, which was right near our stage. And they were walking toward the exit and we kicked in with Cities on Flame with Rock and Roll, you know. And all of a sudden the whole crowd just turned and came right over in front of our stage and it worked out perfectly. We love that festival. There's actually, we filmed the whole thing. Yeah, you can go on Joe Bouchard's YouTube channel and see it. But Ryan Roxy, that was great, you know, because he lives in Sweden.
Yeah, he's a Sweden guy.
Yeah, therefore, for some reason, the festival has a thing about using, other bands, not necessarily Swedish musicians, right? But we found a loophole. He's sitting in with us. So that was great. Of course, the tricky part there is that when Ryan is playing certain Alice Cooper songs with Alice, he might be playing the Glenn Buxton part or the Michael Bruce part. And with Blue Coop, then Joe plays certain parts. So they had to kind of work that out where now Ryan is playing. Same thing happened at the thing in Dallas, actually, where he had to work out with Michael. Okay, Michael, normally I play your parts. So now all of a sudden on the drop of a dime, I have to play Glenn's parts. But he's great. All of those people in Alice's band are great. So it wasn't much of a problem.
And you guys, I know you, like you said, you released that album, 11 Even. And are you guys working on any new music right now? I mean, I know that you're always songwriting, so I'm sure that there are some songs in the works that might end up on something in the future. But is there anything that you guys are planning to put together, sometime soon?
Well, for Blue Coop, we're doing a thing on... if you looked up, you know, Sylvain of the New York Dolls recently passed away. So all of his friends, and there's a lot of them because he was a good guy. He reminded me of Glenn Buxton, actually. He's a sweetheart of a guy. But all of the people in New York City, Tish and Snooki, who have Manic Panic, the hair dye company, but they are singers. They sing everything with Blue Coop. Pretty much everything I do these days, Tish and Snooki sing on. But we made a music video that will be shown at that. It'll be a virtual show, even though certain bands in New York City will be playing at Bowery Electric, which is one block away from where CBGB was. And that'll be on Sunday. If somebody wants to go to my Facebook page, Dennis Dunaway, you can find where to get tickets for it. It's like $15, and it's got David Johansen, Debbie Harry, all kinds of people like that. But we did a song called Pills, which the New York Dolls did, which Bo Diddley wrote, of all people. And that came out good. So that's also Peter Perenyi, the same guy that did the Coco Coffin, is the guy that's editing that together for us. So we're doing that. I'm also writing, you know, whenever you work with Alice, there's a shroud of secrecy. You know, I'm not allowed to talk about it. But yeah, we're always working on something, though. I can say that. And we're on this something right now, as of just, I just sent it to him yesterday. I sent him a song, and he says, oh yeah, I like this, except can you change the intro and can you change that? And I'm like, sure. You know, I'll get back to you. And then I change it and send it back. And so we're doing stuff like that. And it's always exciting, because him and I know his taste and he knows mine. And so there's not that much discussion, where I've worked with other musicians that we didn't have that long history with.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of explaining, especially if you do things online, you know. That's a good thing about the Blue Coupe album. You know, we were together 11 years. That's why it's called 11 Even.
Yeah.
And it has 10 songs, but if you wait 11 seconds, there's an 11th song, Jump the Gun, which is the video it's going to be. But we did that whole album all in the same room together. There was no sending demos back and forth like our previous two albums. So I just love music, and I have a lot of great musical friends that are very talented. And that's what Cindy and I love about, you know, our life, really, is because kindred spirits out there, you know. And we, you know, you're talking about Calico, you know, how many people could I say, okay, well, we're going to do this movie where I'm in a coffin, yeah, right? And with her, it's like, you don't even have to explain it, you know. It's,
yeah, like, she's like, yeah, I'm in. You don't even have to finish your sentence. I will do it.
Yeah, well, Tish and Snooki are like that too. I have some pretty abstract ideas in my songwriting, and when I go to explain it to them, it's like, boom, they're right on the same page.
Yeah, and I mean, especially with Alice too. I mean, you guys built your entire career off of being abstract and unique, and doing things that nobody else would think about doing. So it's worked out pretty well for you guys so far.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's really is the, I'm saying American dream, but it really is the teenager's dream. You know, if you're, you know, little girls back then would be a ballerina, and little boys would want to play football or be a musician, a rock star, right? And we met, you know, Alice was 15 and I was 16, and we, you know, that letter, you know, is pretty, you can tell we were just kids. If you read that letter, it's pretty sophomoric, I guess. But we got this dream, okay, we're going to start a band and we're going to incorporate artistic ideas into it. And then we talked other people into doing that. And then we talked other people into dressing crazy, and everybody, you know, what are the odds that we would have five musicians in a band that would all agree to do a song called BB on Mars? You know, it really was, you know, once Neil and once Michael and everybody kind of saw this vision, then we all moved forward, and everybody put in as much creativity and hard work as the next guy, and we didn't let anything get in the way. You know, same with Joe and Shep, our managers, you know. It's like throwing in the towel was not, you know, it's no rear view mirror. We're moving ahead. I think some of that was because Alice and I ran long distance, you know, cross country and stuff. It's like you just keep going no matter what. But that's what we did. And so here's these high school kids with this dream. And we took it all the way to number one in the UK and the United States. So I achieved my dream, really. You know, nobody can feel sorry for me.
Yeah. I mean, and you look back on that, it's really, I mean, you guys, and I always say this because I love the Alice Cooper Band. It's just, to me, you guys started that entire movement that came after, you know, that the whole Kiss thing and all, everything that kind of continued. You know, you guys, to me, we're the very beginning. I mean, nobody else was doing all that stuff. And you guys are really the innovators, you know, from the makeup to the outfits and to everything that you guys were doing. So, I mean, I love the work that you've done. I've been a huge fan for many years. So I'm glad to hear that you went forward and didn't let anything stop you, because you definitely achieved the dream. And I mean, like you said, it's 40 years later, it's 50 years later, and people are still, you know, flocking to hear these songs. So.
Yeah, well, thank God for that. And, you know, and I think a lot of that has to do, you're talking about being in the audience of Alice's show with your parents. You know, I started doing these monster conventions and stuff where they would have celebrities that would meet fans and sign things for them. And it seemed like when I first started doing them, which was maybe in the 80s or something like that, you would have parents bringing a kid to meet me, right? And the kid obviously looked like they had something better to do, you know. and then it changed. It's like, you know, 10 years after that, all of a sudden, because of school's out, you know, there would be a kid that brought his parents, and they look like, oh boy, you know, who's this guy, you know? But that's the great thing. I mean, thank God for schools out for that. I'm 18 too in the Midwest, but you know, it's like there's little kids everywhere that the last day of school, they hear our song.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I grew up just listening to this type of music. My parents were big rock fans. And I mean, I heard Alice Cooper for the first time, and I was very young. I was like 8 or 9, and it just something clicked in me, and it's kind of taken me on this journey of kind of where I am now and doing journalism and kind of getting into the music industry. So it definitely clicks, and I'm not the only one. You know, I know a lot of people in my age group who are into this music and, you know, feel the same way about you guys and other bands. And it's great. I mean, I love seeing that, you know, I guess I'm one of them, but you know, people continuing on and kind of carrying the torch. And, you know, like I said, it's 50 years later, and, you know, you can go to Jones Beach and there's, you know, it's sold out, you know, it's insane. It's so cool.
Well, we still got a long way to go, you know?
And before I let you go, at the end of every single one of my interviews, I ask kind of like 5 rapid fire, almost questions. I mean, you can explain them if you'd like. They're not too long or too crazy. I call them the Metal from the Inside 5. So the first one is, if you weren't in the profession that you're currently in, so obviously musician, songwriter, bass player, what do you think that you would be doing?
I would probably be an artist. I might be a writer, something artistic.
Yeah. I mean, obviously I think you have a lot of creativity, so it'd be something probably in that realm for sure.
Well, that's what I would like to be doing. Not, not everybody gets to have a job that's something that they love, but if you can do that, then, you know, that makes a whole difference in your life.
Yeah, I completely agree. The second question is, what is something that you wish everybody knew about you? So like, whether that's a secret talent, do you have like a guilty pleasure, something that not a lot of people might know?
You know, people should know that if they say, if they wanted to get some information out of me that I didn't want to give them, all they have to do is set a big bowl of popcorn in front of me, just out of my reach. I'll talk.
Number 3, if you were stranded on a desert island, the age old question, and you could only bring 3 records with you to listen to, what would they be?
Okay, well, the question is, would I have a record player and electricity?
Hopefully. in a perfect world, you would.
Oh my God. Oh, all right. Well, I would maybe bring albums or just songs?
Albums.
Okay, I would maybe bring Astral Weeks, Van Morrison. I love that album. I might bring something by Free, maybe. I might bring something by Elvis, maybe. Or maybe what is the AC/DC live album with a whole lot of Rosie?
Oh man.
Yeah, oh, I could sit there with sharks going around the island and da-da-da-da-da-da.
I always joke around, I'm like, in an ideal situation, there'd be somebody else on the island that you could barter records with and change it up every once in a while.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you could put it on a little raft and send it away and something else would come back.
Yeah, message in a bottle. Please send more records. Three is not enough.
Yeah, and the other side of the question is like, if you had your favorite album of all time and that's the only one that you could listen to, how long would it still be your favorite?
That's what somebody I had on, I forget who said this on the podcast, said that they would bring an album that actually wasn't probably one of their favorites, so that they would grow to love it. Because, you know, it's at first, yeah, it's like, I'll bring my favorite. And then you're like, I've already heard this album so many times. I mean, it's my favorite, but you might as well bring something I haven't heard. You know,
yeah, you know, yeah, probably going with, you know, Beethoven or something might be a good idea.
The fourth question is, what is one piece of advice that you would give to your younger self if you could?
Oh my God. This is one of my regrets, working with the Alice Cooper Group, because I was so driven and so the crusader for making everything better all the time. Glenn Buxton called me the pest, you know? Yeah. I would say, and generally the whole band did this, where we would, if somebody brought a song to the table, we would, let's change this. Let's make this better. Let's make that better. And let's make that better. And when the song got to the level where nobody could think of anything that we could add to it to make it better, then that was the end of it. You know, and that's my regret. I never said, great job. Now we got it. That's excellent. Right. Way to go. Cool part. You know, nobody did that. We didn't. It's just like when you got everybody to shut up, then that meant it was good.
Yeah. I mean, when you're in the middle of doing it, and believe me, I'm a perfectionist too. It's hard to be like, wow, that's really good. You know, you're still like, there must be something else that I can do to make this, you know, something else, you know,
it's hard to
appreciate it sometimes.
you just hit the nail on the head. That's probably what it was. We were all, you know, just perfectionists to where even when it got to where we wanted it to go, you still thought there must be something.
Yeah. Well, they ended up being pretty damn good, even though at the time you thought that something else had to be added. So,
and then after all that work and all of that critical analysis and everything that went on, you hear it back after you finish recording it, and especially if you had a space of time after you got out of the studio and gave it a rest for a while, and then all of a sudden you heard it on the radio or something, you go, wow, you know, hey, we did pretty good, I guess.
That's actually really good. Yeah, a lot better than I remember when I was doing it. The last question I have for you is more of a fun one. If you could have one superpower, what would it be? Any superpower?
Oh my God. Okay, I'll go with superpower. Yipes. I would like to, I'm gonna say this is a superpower. I'd like to play guitar like Jimi Hendrix.
That's a superpower. I mean, I want that superpower too. That's a pretty good.
Who doesn't, right?
Well, thank you so much for taking the time out of your afternoon to come on the podcast. Like I said, I've loved your music for many years, so it was an honor to have you on, and I'm excited to see everything that you have in the works, film-wise, and of course, you know, music-wise in the future with, you know, Blue Coop and Alice. So I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sydney.
Of course. You guys just finished listening to my interview with original bass player for the Alice Cooper Group, Dennis Dunaway. Thank you guys so much for taking the time to listen to this week's episode and, of course, my conversation with Dennis. As I mentioned in the introduction to this episode, Dennis is such a nice guy, and I was so happy that he wanted to join me on the podcast for this week's episode to chat all things Alice Cooper, you know, Alice's brand new record Detroit Stories, and, of course, everything that Dennis himself has been up to over the last year with his band Blue Coop and, of course, with his film Cold Cold Coffin. So it was such a fun conversation and, once again, a dream come true for an Alice Cooper fan like me. It was an honor to have Dennis on, and I hope you guys enjoyed listening to it as much as I enjoyed being a part of it. If you guys really loved what you heard and are interested in donating to the Metal from the Inside podcast, you can go to www.anchor.fm/metalfromtheinside. Here you can click on the support button and donate either $1, $5, or $10 a month directly to the podcast. Again, no donation is necessary to listen. We are available for 100% free on every streaming service, including Spotify, Apple, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, CastBox, Anchor, YouTube, anywhere that you get your podcasts. So there is no donation necessary to listen. I always just like to have the option there for those who might be interested. If you would like to stay up to date with Metal from the Inside, the best place to do so is on our website at www.metalfromtheinside.com. We are also on Instagram at Metal from the Inside, on Twitter at MFTI Official, and you can also go ahead and like our official Facebook page. If you would like to stay up to date with me, Sydney Taylor, in real time, you can follow me on Instagram at Sydney Anna Taylor and on Twitter at S Taylor Official. You can also go ahead and click the contact tab on the Metal from the Inside website. Every single email that goes through that contact sheet will go directly to me. I always love to chat with you guys about hard rock and heavy metal, and also hear your suggestions as to who you want to see on the podcast, and even ideas for future episodes. So don't hesitate to reach out. Of course, you can email me that way, or you can reach out to me via my messages on Instagram or Twitter. Never hesitate to say hello. Again, I really love chatting with you guys. You can also subscribe to the Metal from the Inside podcast, once again, wherever you get your podcasts, and especially on YouTube. Be sure to subscribe, share the podcast with all of your metalhead friends, and we will be back here in 1 week for a brand new episode of the Metal from the Inside podcast. Like I always say at the end of these episodes, I have some really cool interviews in the works. I really do. I really mean it. I don't just say that. I'm always working to try to get some amazing content and guests for you guys. So a lot is happening, a lot is in the works, and more will be revealed soon. So have a great rest of your week. Stay safe, and we will be back in 1 week for episode 34 of the Metal from the Inside podcast. Rock on.